I've heard that the use of stimulant medications has raised some concern about the possibility of substance abuse. Is that a problem typically in children with ADHD?
Well, the follow-up studies that have been done going back now decades do clearly show that children with ADHD are at increased risk for substance abuse as adolescents and young adults, on the order of a 2- or 3-fold increase. But what's very important for parents and clinicians to understand is that the use of psychostimulants as a treatment does not seem to contribute to that risk. Indeed, some studies suggest the opposite, that there might be a protective factor in early treatment during and continuing that through the time of risk for the development of substance use. So there is increased risk for substance abuse, but treatment does not seem to contribute to it.
And separate and apart from substance abuse, I think also, you know, stimulant misuse is something that's gotten some attention. And I think that clinicians need to be aware of this as a phenomenon. A certain percentage, approximately 10% of high school and college students, if properly prescribed medication, will unfortunately either, you know, give it to their friends, give it to their dorm mates. And it's not for the purposes necessarily of getting high, but more often than not to facilitate studying, all-nighters, you know, last-minute cramming in an academic environment. And, clinicians should be mindful of this, speak to their patients about the importance of not doing this. It is a breach of the law, and obviously can also potentially pose safety issues.
It certainly brings home the need for continued close monitoring to ensure that a diversion, a misuse, or abuse is not taking place.
And if there is a concern of actual abuse of these substances, there are, at this point, two of the stimulant preparations that can really minimize that. One is a preparation, a long-acting preparation, that comes in an encapsulated form that's really impossible to break, so you can get the active ingredient that could potentially be used intravenously, for example. And more recently, there was the development of a prodrug. Again, it's not something that you can grind up and inhale as a form of abusing these substances. So those are options if there's some concern that these actual drugs may be being misused, not necessarily by an ADHD individual, but by others as well.
I assume you're talking about orosmethylphenidate and then also in terms of lisdexamfetamine as being the prodrug. I think that from a prescribing standpoint, it's the short-acting formulations that have the greatest potential for abuse. The typical 4-hour old-fashioned short-acting methylphenidate or amphetamine tablets, as sort of implied in Dr. Elias's comments, you know, they do have the potential to be snorted, and they have the potential to be ground up and injected. And although those aren't the most common forms of misuse, they are easily abused when given in a short-acting formulation as tablets.
It seems like the more extended-release preparations have less of the subjective effects that would tend to promote abuse. So again, as was stated, we tend to rely more on those longer-acting preparations to try to avoid some of the abuse potential.
And then another option would be the use of atomoxetine, which is not known to be abused.
Well, we have one more patient who shared his story with us to help show how ADHD can affect adults. Lou's ADHD became apparent when he was still in elementary school, but it wasn't until adulthood that he learned what it was and that it could be treated.
I first knew I had symptoms when I was in grade school, but I didn't know that it was ADHD. When I got report cards, they were always that he shows potential, but, you know, he tends to be disruptive. He doesn't finish any of his work. I have one that says that I have, you know, more unfinished papers on my desk than anybody else. This is in first grade. I don't know. How do you have an unfinished paper in first grade? The teacher that I had in first grade was a little bit more tuned in than most teachers and, you know, better educated about stuff like that than most teachers would be. So she approached my mother about it. This is 1962, was minimum brain dysfunction. You know, that obviously carried, like, so much stigma and stuff. That was probably, you know, part of why my mother was like, I'm not, you know, buying that. There was a time when I was in school, a colleague of mine and I both came in and realized half an hour before, you know, kind of an in-class test that we had, it was a writing assignment. And he sits down and he spends 30 minutes and he just like cranks through it, you know, like this, every, you know, step by step by step. I sat down and I wrote furiously for 5 minutes. Then I got up and got a snack. Then I came back and I wrote furiously for 5 minutes. And we both did fine on it, but it was like, I could no more, you know, sit down and just like crank through it for 30 minutes. I mean, typically when I would face a task, I would sit and look at it and I would kind of have a sense of it being overwhelming. And my first reaction is like, okay, I just need to get my head in the right space before I start this. So I would go and make a cup of coffee or tea or something, or go have a bite to eat, or go check the mail, or make sure that, you know, the leaves were off the lawn. Yeah, anything that could take, you know, the whole day, and it might take like 3 days of getting ready before being able to tackle a task. It came up when I was working on my dissertation for my PhD, and I was having just a really hard time with it. Disorganization is like one of the key symptoms you see in adults, and I was no exception. I have two children who are also being treated for ADHD.
Is that your answer?
Cool.
My ex-wife had gone skiing with the kids. She got on the chairlift with a fellow who was ADHD and was, you know, talking about it. So she came home with this, you know, bug in her ear. Partly about my daughter, but then also about, you know, well, this kind of looks a little bit like the way you are sometimes. You know, I tried a medication for depression. I tried some medications for anxiety. It took a couple years before somebody was like, okay, let's try a stimulant and see if, because that treats ADHD more directly. My treatment regime now is pretty simple. You know, I take one pill in the morning and then I take about half that amount of dose at like 1 or 2 in the afternoon, and it takes me through the rest of the day. Since having started treatment, I find when I work, I'm a little bit more efficient about, you know, when I do get myself to sit down at a desk and work, I can kind of track what's important and stay on task.
I like spend time with my dad kayaking. He helps me with my homework. We go to plays and movies and things together.
Lou is just a phenomenal parent. I've seen what a great job he's done with both Erica and Matthew. And because he has such a fabulous, playful nature, it was amazing. Well, Lou and I had a lot of discussions, especially at our age, him having a third child and me having my first child. And he said, do you really want to have your son have the genetic baggage that I've carried? And I said, well, you're such a phenomenal person that there's no doubt, even if he has ADHD, he'll be a very successful and loving, caring human being. You know, Jackson's 3 weeks old now. He just has a really great time spending time with him and playing with him.
But once I came up with kind of the recipe that worked, I'd say it works really well.
Well, that's a great illustration of how ADHD can be managed successfully, even in an individual like Lou, who leads a life as a professional.